last national intelligence estimate on homeland threats was released today, and it says al-Qaeda is moving to capitalize on the contacts and capabilities established in Iraq to launch an attack on U.S. soil. The report also includes possible threats from Lebanese Hezbollah and non-Muslim groups, but maintains the primary danger is still from the al-Qaeda terrorist network. The U.K. has expelled 4 Russian diplomats in retaliation for Moscow's refusal to hand over the man suspected in the radiation poisoning death of a Kremlin critic who was killed in London. Russian authorities have strongly criticized the expulsions and say it will not go unanswered. U.S. helicopters today killed 5 terrorists attempting to plant roadside bombs southeast of Baghdad. The 2 Apache helicopters are part of Task Force Marnie, which has been responsible for the clearing of over 1,100 structures and detaining 278 insurgents in the southern outskirts of the capital. In the western province of Anbar, a massive U.S.-led offensive began last Sunday in the Sunni heartland. Operation Martini, utilizing over 9,000 troops, is focused on neutralizing future attempts by insurgents to reestablish themselves in major cities along the Euphrates River. In Pakistan, 10 people were killed today and 30 wounded when a bomb was detonated in the capital city of Islamabad. This is the latest in a series of bombings as a result of a truce collapse between the government and tribal militants. In Baghdad, 30 legislatures allied to radical Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr have agreed to return to Iraq's parliament, ending a boycott that began last month. Sunni factions continue to refuse to attend parliamentary sessions.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. We had trouble with our news feed, so I'm starting a little early today. And, of course, there's a lot to talk about. Well, it's a heat weekend review, so all topics are valid. And I'd love if you'd give me a call at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, toll free. What do we got? Well, we got an all-night filibuster going on in the Senate. The Republicans are saying, give war a chance. Just give us a chance. It's been 5 years. Give war a chance. We'll talk about that technique and how it works, both technically and why politically they're doing it. And, of course, there is Bush's adamant opposition to poor children getting health care in this country. This is a story that has really gotten very little media play, and it's very important that you know about the S-CHIP program, the Children's Health Program. And I'd like you to think and ask all your compassionate conservative friends, why do they believe poor children ought to die in America? Why is that compassionate conservatism? And suggest to them instead Jonathan Swift's modest proposal that instead we bake the children, the poor children, and serve them as a popping hot meal for rich people. That way the rich are better off, they get the tasty children, and the poor get some money as well. Maybe that would be more humane than Bush's stand on the S-CHIP program. Meanwhile, there's all kinds of media fawning over Fred Thompson. I want to talk about Fred Thompson this hour, the empty suit, who, because he is a large, bulky, craggy-looking guy who's an actor who plays a decent sort on TV, why, that's enough to satisfy Republicans, since, after all, they really don't care much for thought or brains. What they really want, what deep down in their soul, is they want a daddy. Then, of course, there's a constitutional crisis caused by George Bush's failure and refusal to allow Congress to have any oversight. Apparently, there's nothing George Bush hates more than checks and balances. We always knew he hated the Constitution. I just didn't realize he was going to throw the entire thing out. I thought it was just the Bill of Rights. No, he's throwing the entire thing in the trash. We'll talk about that, and we've got to talk about the hypocrisy of this right-wing, judicially activist court, a court that cares nothing for precedent, cares nothing for law, cares nothing for the Constitution, but is making up its own law. It's actually overturning the decisions of the American people, acting in an anti-democratic fashion, doing all the things they accused liberals of until they got power themselves. So, all in all, it's a typical week in Washington, and we have a lot to talk about. You can help determine which of these topics I talk about most or first, and I'd really want to encourage you folks to give me a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's start with the filibuster. Now, some of you know how this works, some of you don't. I'm happy to explain, having spent some time in Congress. Most of you know that a filibuster is sort of ongoing debate. and that it, you may know that it takes 60 votes to break a filibuster. It hasn't always been the case in America. In the very, very early Senate, the first 15 years of our history, the Senate, like the House, could simply cut off debate. Then that rule was done away with in 1804, and for about 100-plus years, there could be no vote on any topic in the Senate as long as one senator was willing to talk all day and all night and all day and all night to keep that filibuster alive. Then around the time of Woodrow Wilson in the early 1900s, they said, well, if there's two-thirds of the Senate vote, you can cut off debate. Now, of course, these debates aren't about debates. They're not about people wanting to be heard on the issue. That's just a technical thing. Really, they're all about people knowing they're in the minority and not wanting to have a vote on an issue. For example, the majority of senators want to end the war in Iraq, but a substantial minority, mostly Republicans, in fact, almost exclusively Republicans, do not want to have that vote. They are a minority. They want to stop it. It's their right in the Senate. Then around the time of the 1950s, you had the famous filibusters against the civil rights movement. You may recall Strom Thurmond or you know, spending all day and all night reading from the dictionary if he had to, trying to prevent the civil rights bills from going through. So in the 1960s, the Senate changed its rules once again, down from 67 to 60. 60 is the magic number. It's been the magic number for 40, 50 years now. You have to have 60 votes to cut off debate. Now, again, technically, this is cutting off debate. Technically, what it means is you have to keep talking. But that's not how it's worked. Over the last 10, 20 years, Congress, the Senate has said, look, hey, you know, we need 60 votes. So if we don't have the 60 votes, we'll vote for cloture. We'll vote to close off debate. And if we don't have 60, we'll just move on to another topic. But that's not the way it has to go. Technically, debate does end when no one is left speaking. And you don't need 60 votes to end debate if no one is left to debate. So one of the things you can do when you have a recalcitrant minority, as we do here with the Republican minority in Congress, is you can make them talk. You can't make them vote, but you can make them talk all day and all night. And if ever one of them isn't there, ready to talk, bam, you can call for a vote and call for cloture and get a vote. So the Democrats are doing what they can do, and I'm actually proud of Harry Reid and the others, people like Carl Levin and Jack Reed, for standing up to the Republican minority and saying, all right, you want to give war a chance? Just keep talking. Talk all night and all day. And that's what they're doing tonight, my friends. They're making the Republicans talk all night. So if you got nothing to do at 3 a.m. and you want to watch C-SPAN, there's some lame Republican, maybe John McCain, maybe someone else, out there defending the war, saying give occupation a chance. They have to. If they stop talking, the Democrats immediately go for cloture. I like this. I like this old-fashioned, look, if you're going to filibuster, make them filibuster. Make them seem like the idiots they are. The bill that they propose is actually a fairly decent compromise. It's not cutting off funds. A lot of you know we don't have the majority, and certainly not that kind of majority, to cut off funds. That's one of the reasons why the Democrats caved in May to give Bush's supplemental. We simply didn't even have a majority to say, you know, strand the troops in Iraq, bring them home now. Because, frankly, that's not even the best military solution. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you that, you know, cutting off the funds and a precipitous withdrawal, even I don't think that's the best answer. I kind of like the answer sponsored by Reid and Levin. It requires Bush to begin reducing the number of U.S. troops in Iraq within 4 months. It requires them to reassign remaining forces to specific missions, including training Iraqi security forces, counterterrorism operation, and most U.S. troops have to leave Iraq by April of next year. Now, that is a drawdown policy. It's not a precipitous withdrawal. Frankly, this is a war, as you know, that I never supported, and I'm sure you didn't either. But, it makes sense to do a phased withdrawal. Now, this is a vote. We've got some Republicans on. We've got Olympia Snow of Maine, Gordon Smith of Oregon, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, and some others, frankly, who are close. So we've had Lugar and Voinovich and others condemn the war. It would be very interesting to see what happens tonight. Now, I have to say, I don't expect anything to happen. I certainly don't expect the Republicans to cave in. But I think this is a sign the Democratic Party is not just sitting still. They're doing their best, and hopefully it's showing the country who the recalcitrant ones are, who are the ones who are defending the occupation of Iraq. And let's face it, the Iraqi people want us gone. Did you hear the other day Prime Minister Maliki says he doesn't need us anymore? He doesn't need our troops anymore. The head, the elected government of Iraq says, you know what, we're okay. We can handle it. You can leave. Did you see this on the front page of your newspaper? Probably not. Now, what is it with our press that they're not covering this? Again, all you have to read is the Associated Press. It's there on the web. Quote, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki on Saturday, he said the Iraqi forces are capable and, quote, American troops can leave any time they want. Any time they want. In fact, his aides accused the United States of embarrassing the Iraqi government by violating human rights and treating his country like, quote, an experiment in a U.S. lab, unquote. Now, I want you to think about this. Al-Maliki, the elected prime minister of Iraq, and we're supposed to all be about democracy in Iraq, has said we can leave any time we want. He doesn't need our help. Heck, the head of South Vietnam didn't even say that kind of stuff. Well, you know what? I take him at his word. But what I really wonder is why this isn't front page of the newspaper. Why is it that you have to listen to the head-on radio network to get these news? It's not like there's any doubt. Read the Associated Press. I mean, this is there's some 480-something articles on the web about it. But what you don't see is in the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post or even on CNN and MSNBC. Why isn't this big news? What is the media trying to hide? Well, of course, George Bush has given a press conference the other day where he argues that al-Qaeda will take over Iraq if we leave. That it'll become a failed state like Afghanistan, and they'll be in control. How much does he really think we're going to buy? Was it Abraham Lincoln that said, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me? Al-Qaeda wasn't even in Iraq until we invited them in with open arms by removing Saddam Hussein. George Bush, you are the reason al-Qaeda's in Iraq, and if we leave, al-Qaeda will leave as well, and I'll tell you why. The situation in Iraq is very different from Afghanistan. Iraq is a much more secular state, and it probably has no more than the support of about 5% of the Sunni populace. They're turning to al-Qaeda because they hate us. But as we've seen in Anbar, al-Qaeda has no real allegiance in Iraq. There's allegiance to their backgrounds, Sunnis to Sunnis and Shias to Shias. But I am quite confident that al-Qaeda will not be the problem in Iraq if we leave. I'm confident that won't be the problem. Frankly, you want to know where al-Qaeda's a problem? I'll give you a country where al-Qaeda's a problem. It's called Pakistan. And the dictator of Pakistan, a guy by the name of Musharraf, is our bedfellow. He's George Bush's best friend. Al-Qaeda is stronger there, apparently, than at any time since September 11th, and we do nothing about it. Absolutely nothing. Now, once you got past the silly WMD argument, that's gone, and once you got past those stupid people who believe the government's lie that Saddam Hussein has something to do with 9/11, which we all know is false, and once you ignore, you know, we all want oil and military bases, which the right says it's not about that. They say it's about democracy. They say it's about forming a democratic state in the heart of the Middle East where everyone can sing kumbaya and we can recreate the Middle East in our image. We will have the greatest colonial experiment since the British in the Middle East. Oh, wait, that didn't succeed. Well, the French in the Middle East. Well, wait, that didn't succeed. Well, the British and the French in Africa. Okay, wait, that didn't work. Indochina. Wait, no. Has any colonial experiment worked? I mean, where we didn't massacre all the inhabitants as we did the Native Americans here. I can't think of one. No, what's going to happen in Iraq if we leave? It's not an al-Qaeda problem. What's probably going to happen is the Shia will be with the Shia, and the Sunni will be with the Sunni, and the Kurds will be with the Kurds. And it won't be pretty. won't be pretty at all. Frankly, it'll look a lot like Bosnia and Kosovo after the 1995 war, Clinton's war, the war I supported, the war to stop genocide, and today a relatively peaceful region of the world where, yes, each ethnic group has their own enclave where they feel safe. Heck, that's part of what nationalism and nation states are all about. It's not the worst solution in the world. Certainly, maybe not as preferable as a nice two-bit weakened dictator, secular dictator. After all, this government is a theocratic government. It's frankly far closer to the Taliban than Saddam Hussein ever was. But it may be the best we can do. If you want to call on Iraq or any of the subjects I mentioned or just anything you want to talk about, this is your chance. I want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. You can also dial 304-658-5912 if you want. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
America's most dangerous investigative reporter, Greg Palast, joins Bob Kincaid for a bit of conversation radio.
But I have to tell you, this is such a pleasure to be able to actually lay it out.
Greg, anytime you want to lay it out, okay? We're reinventing things here. We call it conversation radio. We're very serious about that. And anytime you've got one of those that's a bit of a Gordian knot, bring it here, please. Because there are people hungry for information and who are willing to, you know, this is not the Fox audience. We actually sit and think about stuff.
I like it. That's why I like it. It's the head-on radio network as opposed to the head-off television network that we've been suffering with. So I do appreciate your work, and let's set up another time. Take it easy, buddy.
Indeed. Take care, Greg. Thank you so much.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Got a police dog craving for a fight.
Hi, this is Sarah Jessica Parker. It's hard to believe that 1.5 million people in New York City are at risk of going hungry. More than half of them are children and the elderly. The Food Bank for New York City provides the food that soup kitchens, food pantries, and shelters use to feed those in need. Now more than ever, we need your help in the fight against hunger. For more information, visit the Food Bank at www.foodbanknyc.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I don't often talk about little personal things, but I'm sitting here in a sauna. It's about 87 degrees because the air conditioning doesn't work right now. So I've just spilled a little bit of water all over the place. But hey, that's life, right? It's far better off than the people in Iraq, that's for sure. You know, we tend to forget, I think, how miserable it is over there. I mean, it's only when, you know, you see the coffins, which, again, the media is mostly not covered, and when you see the victims, the veterans coming home without an arm, without a leg, and, you know, check your tax bill, because for the next 50 years, you're going to be paying taxes on this war. But they've really done their best to hide the cost, just make veterans suffer. And we all know this is an administration where there are very few veterans in there. Just make the veterans suffer and, you know, put all those taxes on the back of the poor. I'll tell you one thing, though. The tax money that that they're spending on Iraq, well, one thing they will not spend it on is poor children. Because it's very, very important to set up permanent military bases, permanent oil bases, to make sure that Halliburton and Kellogg Brown Root get hundreds of billions of dollars. But try to expand the state children's health insurance program, SCHIP, which provides basic health care for poor kids. Well, you would think that you were trying to start a war. George Bush will have nothing to do with it. Congress, now that the Democrats are in charge, but with a lot of bipartisan support, wants to increase SCHIP funding by $35 billion. Basically, what it does is it allows poor kids who might have leukemia or who might even simply need a shot to get that immunization, so we don't have public health crises in our cities, so that our kids don't live like the kids in the third world. This isn't universal health care. This isn't what France and England and Canada have, although I support that. It's simply allowing poor kids to have a chance. Well, Bush not only doesn't want to raise this funding for poor children's health care, he wants to limit it. He wants to restrict it. He wants to say that only people who are 200% of the poverty level. And that would mean that in 17 states, they would lose funding. Ah, but what about taxes? You know, I mean, it's one thing to pay hundreds of billions of dollars in taxes so that we can help the oil companies. I mean, that all makes sense. But taxes to pay for poor children's health care? Well, that's extreme. How will the Democrats pay for it? They're going to raise taxes on cigarettes. And they're going to reduce some of the subsidies in that, remember that prescription drug bill, where the government is subsidizing pharmaceutical companies who already are some of the wealthiest companies on earth and already are charging us 3-4 times what they charge Canadians and so forth. Well, they're going to cut back on some of this corporate welfare and raise taxes on cigarettes, which frankly kill you anyway. And raising taxes on cigarettes is a good health concern. That's all, folks. No income tax. Well, but there's a problem with that. Tobacco companies give hundreds of millions of dollars to the Republican Party. And so do pharmaceutical companies. And let's face it, the real problem is that, you know, as 10 people get more public health care, maybe 2, stop getting private insurance. We're on the way. We're on the way to universal health care. And what is the problem with that? You know, when George Bush was governor of Texas has one of the highest proportions of uninsured residents in the country. And he was against funding poor children even then, even when he was a governor, even when the money was just coming like gravy from the federal government. Let's face it, giving poor kids checkups? I mean, allowing poor children the right to live free from disease? Oh my God, that's socialism. That's communism. That would suggest that poor kids have equal human dignity to the rich. That's ridiculous. We all know, or you should know, about Thomas Swift's modest proposal. Do you know about this? If you haven't, it's one of the great readings that you should do or should have done in high school, maybe. Jonathan Swift is his name. He was an Irishman, and at the time, the English were very much persecuting the Irish, as they have done throughout history, and the Irish are very poor and suffering, and the English were very rich. And, of course, the English didn't want to give anything to help the poor Irish children. So Jonathan Swift had what he called a modest proposal. And if you haven't read this 10-15-page modest proposal from the late 18th century, you really should read it. Here's his modest proposal. It's something that would help the poor and the rich. What we do is we give lots of money from the rich to the poor, and we use it to fatten up the yearlings, the babies, and to have them eat really well And so the babies have food, their families have food, the poor have food. But in return, when the baby is 1 year old, you give the poor baby to the rich person who then cooks the baby and eats him. The rich get a stunning meal of fresh human meat and that they've paid for. And everyone's better off. The poor family gets their money, the rich get their delicacy, and all is well. It's a modest proposal. Well, this modest proposal is very similar to what George Bush wants to do. And if you ask a conservative how it is that as good Christians, and many of these people claim to be good Christians, they would let poor children die, so that we can give more money to CEOs of oil companies. They'll tell you, no, that's not the role of government. That's the role of our churches. That's the role of our private charities. And because churches do the job so extremely well, there is no poverty in America at all. There are no homeless in America. There's no mentally ill in America. Everyone is cared for. Everyone has health insurance. We all know that churches fund 60 million Americans without health insurance, don't they? Do they? Do people go hungry in America? George Bush has never met anyone that's gone hungry in America. There was this homeless guy, but the Secret Service cleared him away from the White House and put him somewhere. George Bush has never seen poverty. George Bush has no idea what goes on in America. If churches and synagogues and mosques, and they're all trying. I'm not knocking churches and synagogues and mosques. They don't have the resources the government does. They can't tax people and force people to be charitable when people are selfish and buying their big expensive cars instead of helping out their fellow human being. When people are being, let's face it, bad Christians, bad Jews, bad Muslims. All three religions, indeed just about every religion I know, talks about caring for the poor. So all those fundamentalist Christians who claim that George Bush talks to God, why are they letting poor children die in America? What would Jesus do? What would he do? Not a capital gains tax cut? I tell you, sometimes some things just make things very, very clear. I mean, you can talk about the Iraq War and it's a mess, and you can talk about how Bush hates the Constitution and torture and all that. But tell that 5-year-old dying of leukemia that I'm sorry. I'm sorry, America can't afford treatment for you. It's your fault, kindergartner. Go out and get a job. It's your fault you're poor. You know that. You should have been born rich. Like George Bush. Then, well, heck, you wouldn't even have to study hard and they'd get you into Yale. That's what affirmative action for white people is all about. That's what legacies are all about, right? We don't want affirmative action for poor black people, but for rich white people, absolutely. And I have to tell you, as someone who got into Harvard and Yale on merit, little pat on my own back, I resent those that didn't get in there on merit, George W. Bush. They got in there based solely on their father's influence and practically flunked out. You hear me, Dick Cheney, who flunked out of Yale? I believe in a meritocracy. I believe in capitalism, my friends. I don't believe in pure socialism. I believe in capitalism, but I believe in equal opportunity. Everyone has to have the same chance. Basic health care, basic shelter, food, education, that's all. Is that too much to ask in the richest country on earth? And then let your talents let you rise or far as fall as they want. If you're successful and you're talented, you should succeed in America. That's capitalism. I have no problem with that. And if you make terrible choices and you're high on drugs all the time and you can't hold a job, and then maybe you should suffer. That's okay, too, as long as you don't go below a very minimum standard of life. But children? Children, W? Children? You want to punish children so that CEOs can buy a 12th yacht? George W. Bush, Jonathan Swift's modest proposal is more humane than yours. Toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6. 6275. We'll talk about other topics, anything you want to talk about, right after this.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business. Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS. What if you established your own path? One that others might follow. Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's a week in review. All topics are valid. Anything you want to talk about, I don't know. There's something about denying health care to poor children. It just rakes in my craw. It just sticks there. You know, as much as I hate that we're sending idealistic, courageous young men and women to die and get mangled in Iraq for no reason, and I hate that, I assure you, at least they're making that choice. Some of them are tricked into it at 18 and so forth, but our veterans are making that choice. But a child never chooses to go hungry. A child never chooses to go without health care. And it's you know, these Republicans, they surround themselves with children all the time, and they're just props. Look, I don't doubt that Republicans love their children. I'm sure they do. I just wish they gave a damn for other people's children. but they don't, do they? No, they. One thing we know for sure, though, they're not good Christians, or good Jews, or good Muslims. Don't let them bring up religion. Don't you ever let anyone talk to me about what a good Christian they are. Oh, they go to church once a week, but they don't support health care for the nation's poor children. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. No. I'm not even Christian, but I'm sorry. You're a bad Christian if you let your fellow countrymen's children starve. If you leave them without health care. You're a bad Christian. Now, there are, don't get me wrong. There are obviously plenty of good Christians who do believe that the meek shall inherit the earth, that do believe that the poor and the needy have a place in the world to come and in the world at present as well. And I'm not picking on y'all at all. I value your work. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about something else the Republicans fawn after. They sure love surrounding themselves with children in the latest fawning. And I dare say, and if you haven't heard it anywhere, you've heard it here first, folks, I think he's the leader for the Republican nomination. Is an actor, a lobbyist, by the name of Fred Thompson, one-term senator from Tennessee. And unlike another one-term senator from North Carolina, John Edwards, not one who distinguished himself very much. In fact, he left the Senate because he was, quote, bored, unquote, with it. Not that smart, not that capable. He doesn't really have very many big ideas. I mean, Barack Obama, who also hasn't spent much time in the Senate, is clearly a man of a lot of ideas. Not Fred Thompson. Fred Thompson is an actor. Fred Thompson is someone who, let's talk about who Fred Thompson is and why it is that Republicans like him so much, and actually, I think he will be in the lead. I think he's going to win the nomination. And I think the reason he's going to win the nomination tells you a lot about, well, the Republican Party. He ain't going to win it based on ideas. He's going to win it for two reasons. One, he's a person the corporations can't control, and that's very, very important to them. And two, he looks like a leader, they say. See, in typical Republican terms, women don't look like leaders. Black people don't look like leaders. Short people don't look like leaders. Poor Dukakis. They didn't want him in a tank. No. Thompson is 6'5" or so. He's a big guy. He's got a gravelly voice. He plays the role of the president well. He's a complete fake, my friends. He's a lobbyist. He goes to whoever pays him hundreds of millions of dollars to talk to someone for him. Now, you know, think about what lobbyists do. Think about what lobbyists do. If American citizens care about something, they petition, they write in, they let people know. Lobbyists, they're paid when the only people who care are people who are making money. When a corporation pays a lobbyist to influence government, let's be very, very clear what's going on here. Either the lobbyist succeeds, in which case the corporation is paying, $300 million to Fred Thompson and others because they're going to get $3 billion in taxpayer money back. Nice return on your investment. Some would call that bribery. I would. Or they're not getting any return on their investment, in which case they're wasting their money. Little wonder that the public rates lobbyists below lawyers, politicians, and used car salesmen. So here is this, in the words of his opponent when he ran his Senate race, Gucci-wearing, Lincoln-driving, Perrier-drinking, Grey Poupon-spreading, millionaire, Washington special interest lobbyist. Okay? That's who Fred Thompson is. And what does he do? He throws on a pair of jeans, he drives around the state in a pickup truck, and he looks the part. He looks the part of a good old boy. And to understand the Republican psyche, you have to understand that they want people who look the part. It doesn't matter that George Bush is the Connecticut scion of Prescott Bush, who made money and supported the Nazis and so forth. He did, by the way. Did you know that? George Bush's father? But as long as George Bush clears brush, I mean, he can fake to be like Reagan, right? Well, Reagan was a fake, too. Ronald Reagan was an actor, but, you know, he could ride that horse into the sunset. Republicans like people who can fake it well. I mean, Thompson is a ladies' man, like Bill Clinton. But other than that, he's a lot like George W. Bush. He is a complete fake. He has this easygoing image that he very carefully cultivates. Frankly, you know what the problem is? The problem is men. It's men. I don't know whether it's homoeroticism or what. I'm going to have to talk with Peter Godbold about this. But 64% of Thompson supporters are male. Men want, apparently, the big, strong daddy type that'll make all the bad, evil, feminine people go away. He chomps on a cigar. He struts around. He looks tough. It doesn't matter whether he is tough or not. Apparently, he made no tough decisions in the Senate. As he told Fox News, the Fox propaganda channel, quote, "I have never beaten down a lot of doors in my life. Occasionally, doors have opened to me, and I had sense enough to see they were opening, and I would walk through them, and that's always turned out well for me." Who is Fred Thompson most like? Paris Hilton. Anna Nicole Smith. Others who've had doors open to them, not based on their talents. Well, I don't know, Anna Nicole Smith, I guess you'd call it a certain kind of talent, but based on something else. I love this quote. This is from an article by Michelle Cottle of the New Republic called "Who's Your Daddy? The Masculine Mystique of Fred Thompson." There was a gaggle of older ladies, she says, and they say, "Can you hear him?" And the other one says, "I can't hear him. I can't hear him, but I love him. I love him, even though I can't hear him." Ah. Let's face it, we love celebrity. We like Hollywood. We believe that a character on TV is exactly like the person he plays. And for Republicans, they love manliness. They don't want women. They don't want gay people. They don't want black people. They want that solid, white, good old Southern boy who drives in his pickup truck and knows what's right. Rumbling baritone. Self-assurance. He ain't a pretty man, folks. He's not a very handsome-looking guy, but he looks like he would have leadership ability. That happens to be absolutely false. This is the kind of guy. He wanted to be a high school basketball coach. He was known as being very likable, extremely lazy. He dozed off in class. And he was a cut-up. The Nashville Tennessean has written that Thompson's high school principal had to create a special study hall for him and one of his close pals, accessible only through the principal's office because he would cut up all the time. I'm sure he's a fun guy. I'm sure you'd want to have a drink with him. He got in trouble with his girlfriend junior year of high school, trouble like she got pregnant kind of trouble. And this is the kind of, dare I say, white trash that he came from. But people like that. Republicans like that. They don't want a candidate who's smarter than they are. They don't want a candidate who is from a family that had money. They want the beer-swilling, frat boy-friendly type that they can go out and feel like this is the kind of guy they could have a drink with. George Bush pretends to have that image, even though he wouldn't have a drink with any blue-collar person. Fred Thompson, now that he is the Gucci-wearing, Perrier-drinking lobbyist that he is, has the same image as well. It's false. But what is it about Republicans that they can't stand a president smarter than they are? They can't stand a president richer than they are. But they really want a president manlier than they are. Which is the homoerotic party? I think the Republicans are feeling a little bit insecure in their own manliness. They don't feel much for their own macho image. So they want a king, a ruler. They want, some hero, John Wayne on a horse, to deal with their own insecurities. And Fred Thompson, a man of absolutely zero political talent, skill, knowledge, or intelligence, he fits that role. Ladies and gentlemen, I suspect he'll be the Republican nominee for precisely that reason. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can talk about this or anything else. Give us a call. We'll be right back after this.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Your calendar for Saturday evening, July 21st, because at 9 p.m. until midnight Eastern, Billy Shears will be right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. You're going to just love night sounds. We'll have plenty of great music and more. So, is it a date? We'll be waiting for you, Saturday night, July 21st. Be there.
Never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Toll free 888-488-MARK. I should say it's 1-888-488-MARK. Some people didn't know to put the one out there. And feel free to call in. We've got Sue on the line. Sue, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Howdy, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I don't know what you think of my ranting today.
Well, you know, I got a little something to rant about myself.
Okay.
When back in 2000, my father-in-law was in a pretty serious car accident. And he's been drawing Social Security disability ever since. And their youngest daughter needed braces. Hers were medically necessary because she couldn't chew food anymore. And mm-hmm. so Medicare agreed to put them on. And because she started out with the palate expander, and that means her teeth was just a mess. So they put that palate expander on, and it breaks all the bones in the top, and it expands yeah. the palate. That way her teeth have room. And then she went to braces after that, and it's all being paid for by Medicare here in Ohio because yeah. her dad is on disability.
Right.
Well, back in December of this year, December of 2006, she was supposed to have had the braces come off and then go to a retainer for however many years. And it was at that time that the state of Ohio was changing insurance companies that handled, you know, and isn't it funny that a Medicare has to kowtow to a private insurance company for all this?
But
it was
all put
on hold, and Bree had to wait. I mean, she's had the same braces on since December, and there's no sign of her ever getting these things off and getting her retainer on and getting on with her life.
You know what, Sue? You know, it's funny. People have complained. I did a show on universal health care on my TV show, and the person on the right, the far right, was saying, oh, well, in Britain they have to wait in line. Well, in America we have to wait in line too, only the difference is that we don't all have health care like they do in Great Britain. And right. you raise an excellent point. That's exactly what happened in your case. And, you know, Congress has tried, the Democrats at least have tried, they've even passed the bill in the House, to allow Medicare to negotiate, to give them more power with these pharmaceutical companies, with these HMOs, and the Republicans say no because they get a lot of money from these pharmaceutical companies, and you know that's part of the way politics works.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, but you know it's real funny that my minor teenage niece has nothing to do with their politics, but she's certainly paying the price for it all. You know.
Well, that's what generally happens. Kids can't vote, but they're the ones that have to suffer. I mean, they're the ones that have to pay twice the amount of taxes for this Iraq war. And they didn't even have a chance to vote for it.
Right.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. And it just goes to show you how un-Christian, un-religious, un-Jewish, un-anything, un-godlike
exactly,
are these people
Mark.
That are running our country.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks for your call. I appreciate
it. Thank you,
it.
Mark.
If you want to call in, the lines are open, 1-888-488-6275, 1-888-488-MARK. A couple things more I wanted to talk about if there's time. One, of course, is the outgoing constitutional crisis. We have Harriet Myers, the woman who George Bush was going to appoint a Supreme Court justice, in fact, refusing to testify before Congress because Bush ordered her to, even though she has no right to refuse under the law, claiming executive privilege because, let's face it, we all know why those prosecutors were fired. They were fired because too many of them were in too many jurisdictions that allowed too many black people to vote. Right. Isn't that what the cover-up's all about? I think so. That's why I think Bush is so determined not to testify before Congress. Well, they're refusing. Young Sarah Taylor is refusing as well. And I said on this program months ago, the only way to fight him is to hold him in contempt. And I think Congress will do that. I think Congress should do that. And put him in jail. Put Harriet Myers in jail. Just put her in jail. It'd be really nice to see a putative Supreme Court justice in jail. Until she understands that the Constitution gives Congress a right to oversight over what the president does. So I hope those contempt things are coming up soon. Now, Bush claims executive privilege, same thing that Nixon claimed. And it may be difficult going through the courts, which Bush has packed. After all, the packed courts chose him as president, and then he's packed the courts even more. It's very scary. But one way I think out of this dilemma is to go ahead and begin impeachment proceedings against Alberto Gonzalez, the lowest rung, the easiest branch, if you will. I'd love to impeach Bush and Cheney, but Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is the lowest rung of the tree, the easiest one to impeach. And if Congress were to at least file articles of impeachment, they were just to file the articles, then when they're trying to get data on the prosecutor scandal, and the court says, what do you need this for? Congress can say, impeachment is a core responsibility under Article 1 of the Constitution. Court, you don't dare tell us no on this. And I don't think they would. Whether or not they'll tell them no for general oversight, I don't know. They shouldn't. Congress has a right to oversight. But I think impeachment would raise the bar. And frankly, I don't believe in you know, filing something when it has no chance of success, but I think impeaching Alberto Gonzalez might well get the 67 votes in the Senate we need. I mean, after all, the man has committed perjury so many times, he makes our head swim. He's the guy who tried to sneak in and convince a sick John Ashcroft to break the law that even Ted Olson and John Ashcroft and James Comey, far right-wingers all, didn't think was constitutional, the idea to wiretap and spy on all 300 million Americans. I think we could actually impeach and remove Gonzalez from office. And if you haven't called John Conyers, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and asked him to do that, it might be a good idea. And I want to close, although you're still time to call in, folks, one last chance, 888-488-6275, 1-888-488-MARK. But if you don't call in, I want to close by talking about the Roberts Court. Really, it's the Alito Court. It's Roberts replaced Rehnquist. Not a real difference there. The real difference, of course, is Alito replacing O'Connor, replacing a far right-wing justice, which is what Justice O'Connor was, with a radical wacko. Now, for 50 years, ever since Brown versus Board of Education, conservatives have lambasted the Supreme Court. There's no decision the Supreme Court hated more, that was hated more by the right wing and Republicans than Brown. Brown suggested that blacks and whites were equal, that they had equal rights, that they were equal Americans, that it was wrong to be racist, that lynching was not a good thing in America, that black and white children had equal claims on America. Republicans hated that. They said, we need majority rule. We need democracy. What legislatures say, they go. If the white people of Alabama vote to keep all the blacks poor and lynched and not allowed to vote, that's the majority, that's democracy, that's the way it works. We need to respect democracy, racist democracy. There's no decision more hated than Brown. And the idea that white children and black children would be bused together to be educated together, where people's lily white children would be forced to go to school with those awful black kids who might well be poor, certainly through no fault of their own. Well, they hated Brown. And in something that I think got way too little attention a couple weeks ago, Brown versus Board of Education was overruled. Oh, Roberts didn't say it was overruled. No. He claimed it wasn't overruled. He said it's we're being true to Brown, he said. Do you know what's in that opinion? Have you read that opinion? I doubt it. Most people have, and I have. The opinion says that if you've got a school that's 99% white, and a white kid wants to go to that school and is not allowed to go to that school because the school has decided that it needs to have a black kid in it, because that's what America's about, that discrimination, that awful discrimination against that poor white child who wants to go to the 99% white school is equivalent to Jim Crow, is equivalent to lynching, and 100 years, 150 years since the Civil War, and not to mention slavery before the Civil War, of absolute racist mistreatment. It's the same thing. Same thing. White kid wants to go to the white school. Black kid wants to go to the white school. Discrimination on the basis of race is wrong, Robert said. Integration is wrong. We have housing patterns, and, well, if whites live with whites and blacks live with blacks, that's just the way the world works. You know, Alabama tried to do that same kind of thing after Brown, and it was turned down then. But here's the kicker, and then I got to close. Here's the kicker. These were voluntary actions by Democratic governments in Louisville and Seattle. And the right wing threw out the Democratic wish of the majority of people of Louisville and Seattle in an extreme amount of activism. They said, if you won't institute racism in your communities, we will. And let no conservative ever complain again about a liberal activist court. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Rustle. After 6 months of negotiations, Southern California supermarket workers with Vons, Albertsons, and Ralph's stores say they are tired of waiting. Since March 5th, the region's 65,000 supermarket employees have worked without a contract. Although they say they don't prefer it, they say they are willing to strike if they do not sign a new contract soon. Leilani Albano has more on the story.
After months at the negotiating table, grocery workers earlier this month threatened to walk out of labor talks for good. Michael Strader is president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 1442, in Santa Monica.
Clearly, enough time has elapsed for the parties to reach an agreement. However, the employers are playing hardball with the union negotiators.
But after a war of words, both parties are back to labor talks and announced last week they are edging closer to an agreement. In the meantime, the union is making preparations for a work stoppage, just in case. So far, they have collected 100,000 pounds of grocery for the workers' food fund and raised millions of dollars in strike money, says Chris Zazueta, a 20-year Ralph's worker.
I could only hope that the corporate CEOs have the common sense to come to the table with something that's fair and equitable for all employees.
For an extended version of that story, visit laborradio.org. Iraqi workers are protesting a proposed new oil law. Doug Cunningham reports.
The Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions is leading protests demanding that the Iraqi parliament reject the proposed new oil law. The union says the law surrenders Iraqi sovereignty to multinational oil companies. According to the union, under the proposed law, Iraq will lose control of its oil. The Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions